Dear Venerable Sisters, Dhamma Friends, we are going to start the day's Dhamma talk. May everyone sit down, settle down and give the consent with 3 times Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සියතාපි පුරිසෝ අරුග්ගත්තෝ පක්ක්ග්ගත්තෝ සරවණං පවිසෙය්‍යාති ති Dear Venerable Sisters, Dhamma Friends, as you all know, we are now in a residential retreat. We are going to start today onward, and this kind of an opportunity is a very rare thing from every point of view. And today is the first day, and the first day of the year. So we must understand how precious, how valuable is this time we are going to spend. So therefore we have a common responsibility as a group to give the maximum facility to achieve the, to reap the best results of this time we are going to spend, as well as we have a individual responsibility also to gain the maximum solitude, so that we have to restrain ourselves or to understand ourselves. So therefore, before directly going into the subject, I would like to discuss how the Buddha instructs us to facilitate this kind of a retreat or meditation session. I think the Buddha, the omniscient one, is highly qualified because he has done this noble quest for a very, very long time without a teacher, without centers like this, without any facilities. He initiated with his own history. And once he reached the goal, he had the compassion to share the same with we people as disciples or practitioners. But it's a massive task to summarize and give that kind of a big amount of experience into a sizable, workable points. But anyway, his wisdom was so profound, understanding our limited capacity, he reduced the whole the gist of the thing into 5 points and explained in yet another sutta, that is in Anuggahita Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya. And he says, in anyone wish to straighten one's view, samadhiti, or broaden one's view, he or she must facilitate in 5 ways, then only through this shortest cut or this straightened path can reach the peace of mind through samatha bhavana or citta vimutti or through vipassana, so insight way. So therefore we all come under that category. We are waiting, or we can say we are striving through this way to achieve our goal, and therefore it is highly relevant to we people. So the first and foremost out of these 5 points, he says, the Buddha says, the sila sikha. Sila sikha is a Pali term, and it translated into English as restraining in your virtues or morality. So when we are living in the world, we know the code of conduct or company of rules according to the Australian law or according to the Sri Lankan law or whatever the society you are living with, never it goes without the constitution. So whenever you are living in a community, you must abide by the constitution. Otherwise, you are asking for trouble. Of course, you can be a law breaker. Then the society will punish you according to the penal code. So therefore, you must understand to live as a civilized person or to get membership, you must follow the suit. Follow suit. So in this meditation retreat itself, the organizers would have given you already the code of conduct during this retreat time and precepts. We all abiding by to say it in the practical way, 8 precepts. So we must understand what are the limits and what are the meaning of these 8 precepts, or how much I can restrain myself basically with the physical and verbal deeds according to 8 precepts. 8 precepts is a convention. We did it for this retreat, but the Buddha himself never fixed kind of a threshold or starting point. He says one must restrain physically and verbally, that is the starting point. So that means day by day you must look into restrain yourself according to your physical deeds, numerically not to kill, not to steal, and not to have misconduct, and then verbally lying, slandering, tale carrying and harsh words, must understand. This is the way we can say a person is a gentle or cultured or member in the society, civilized person. So that as a group itself, or as a group action, or as well as an individual, we must restrain. So then the behavior of such retreatants is different from the other visitors. So we do a lot of things in order to make it clear. And my teacher used to say, whenever we come from our household life and enter into this retreat, the moral conduct precepts give us a chance to rethink and rejuvenate our mind, our value system. So it's a kind of a hurdle, and we know now we can reconsider, or in a sense, if we have done any misdeeds, you can sympathize yourself. Now you have a new chance. You can rethink and reschedule, and therefore these precepts make you giving a kind of a tonic effect or kind of a vitamin for you to think. So therefore one must always take care to maintain precepts, and that indicates how much you have your personality, how much you are getting more and more refined. So this is first and foremost in this restraint. And the second is the one now we are going to do. You must listen to teaching of the Buddha. That means whatever the scholarly achievement you have, whatever the knowledge or book knowledge, theoretical knowledge you have, it is recommended to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, specifically guided to this meditation repetitively, again and again. Then only you can edit, you can reshape, you can rethink according to the new thing you are listening, and some of your misconceptions will be straightened, a new thing you will learn, and remembering can happen, and refreshment can happen, and you feel kind of a happiness, kind of a gladness whenever you are listening to the relevant sets of instructions. So that is why in this retreat timetable, daily we have allocated 1 hour to listen. And that is the way throughout this 2,600 odd years, this message came from the teacher to disciple. Even today we are living in this highly advanced information technology. You can see this direct listening is the most effective communication system. And therefore we have to come and sit and dedicate all your activities and listen. And then you can see the communication takes place. Besides that, there are a lot of other methods. And they have their own weaknesses also. So this is a very effective method the Buddha used. And not only that, he asked us as disciples, whenever you are in a retreat, whenever you are giving full-time consideration about your upliftment, you have to listen it again and again, just like a beginner. To develop the beginner's mind, it's an art. Listening again and again, and then see how much you are getting fine-tuned your already acquired knowledge as well as new points, subtle points, and that is how it is progressing. This is the second point. The third one is discussion, interviews, dialogue, rapport. So the Buddha, even after proclaiming this profoundly and omniscient kind of knowledge, he invited us to not to accept it without the scrutiny, without inquiring. So therefore, he is the only founder of a religious tradition asking the followers to discuss and interviews and not to accept without that. Not to accept just mere by superficial faith, but to discuss. And the best way is to discuss with the Buddha. And otherwise, we have to discuss with his enlightened other disciples. So knowing that the other great disciples, they started this tradition during the contemporary time of the Buddha, they used to discuss. That is not for their own immediate gain, but to start this tradition. So besides all the other direct discourses of the Buddha, you can see all the other prominent disciples, they discuss points, and in this dialogue, a lot of subtle thing came for a people like us. Our minds are not so refined. So the most concentrated kind of teaching of the Buddha became somewhat diluted, somewhat pragmatic, so to say, for others to understand. So not only listening to these dialogues, but we ourselves must have a dialogue. And there only we can correct each other and do away with this vacuum of lack of the Buddha or the great disciples. So whenever we are discussing, we feel like a family, we feel like a coherent group, and we cut off our barriers in the discussion, and we contribute to each other, and it becomes always aligned and pushing forward, taking each other as a role model, and others can follow. Or in the discussion, you can see your image, you can see your face using the other party in the discussion as a mirror. So you become a mirror, you become the image, you become the onlooker. So kind of different perspectives of all our theoretical and rational and practical knowledge. So it's a kind of a really brushing knowledge. So third aspect is, according to this Anugahita Sutta, or the way of facilitating our striving, is discussion. We are going to do it in the at 7:30 p.m. and there we start it as a question and answer session. So you can write your question, and it goes in a question and answer session. I personally try myself the best to make it a discussion. Let the other party, other listeners also to talk, and like a dialogue. So that makes our coherent group, each and everyone is important, each and everyone's view is important, and then we develop kind of a confidence each other. And that is the way the interviews are taking place in back in the in Nisarnavanaya, as well as in the early part of our early years of our retreats in this Jhana Grove. We had personal interviews. When the number in the group is very little, I can allocate sometimes 3 to 5 minutes. But later, as the number increased, it found difficult to allocate individual time for each yogi. And gradually we introduced these common interviews, and that it has its own drawbacks, but it has its positive things also. Because myself, when I started in back in 1977, 78, 79, I used to go to groups and I never talk so shy. I am just listening. So in the discussion I can feel thankful, because some other member in the group asked the same question that I wish to ask, and I feel so happy, and I get the answer also. So I naturally feel the membership in the discussion. And later I found we human have the same question. Even though we are interpreting it in a different ways, the question is the same. Whether you are West or East, you are young or old, educated or not, you are fully thorough knowledge with the canon or not, exactly the same question is basically the question of communication. We don't know how to express ourselves. So we are dumbbound people, like a blind person seeing a dream. He can't explain. So when you are commonly discussing, we try to do away with that weaknesses as much as possible, as brothers and sisters, as the same group. So therefore discussion is it sometimes explained as the whole body exercise and brushing your whole the nervous system. So therefore you have to actively participate, and there you get the sauna bath or massage, or like a refreshment in the brain or the nervous system, so you get a new energy. So these three are very important: the moral restraint, theoretical understanding and refreshment, renewal of the theoretical knowledge, and the discussion. Then even that come up to a satisfactory level, you have to personally do your concentration meditation or your calmness in the mind, as well as the insight vipassana meditation. So on top of that three, you have to do samatha bhavana, the calmness or one-pointedness of the mind, and vipassana bhavana, insight meditation, the see things as they are. So simply say, sitting meditation is something like try to concentrate without moving your body, without talking, and try to focus attention, awareness, to one particular point and be fixed with, be absorbed with that particular object. In walking meditation, you do something willfully, volitionally, you are walking. While walking, you try to fix the attention, left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg, like different objects, but still you try to see how much you can maintain the trend of mindfulness, awareness, even the object is changing, even your intentional work is happening, how much the voluntary action, how much the involuntary action, how far you can continue with this mindfulness. So it's a little bit challengeful. And besides that, in our day-to-day activities, when you're brushing your teeth, eating, taking a bath, going to the toilet, and you know the purpose of that particular thing, while it is happening, how much you can be calm and quiet on one thing at a time, and that done well. And do slowly, do mindfully, and do silently. And there also you try to diversify the mindfulness you gain in sitting and walking, and slowly, slowly, you try to maintain the theme, the thread, the continuity of the mindfulness, sitting, walking, and day-to-day activities like, and that is how you facilitate to the concentration or the calmness of the mind and to the insight of the mind. So that is how individually as well as a group we have to facilitate in order to straighten our view or to know the shortest cut towards this Cheto Vimuti, that means liberation through this concentration, and Panya Vimuti, liberation through this insight. And that is how we try to make use this early part of this new year in the most efficient way. And this is to give a basic tenet, basic ground of the few days yet to come. And after or having said that, now I am going to introduce a particular discourse from the Buddha, and that is what we are going to discuss day after day, and we are going to go deep gradually starting from today, keeping these five things in our mind. And that particular sutta that we are, that particular discourse that we are going to take as the subject is called Chappanaka Sutta. And if you are, if you wish to see the references, you can go into the Sanghita Nikaya, the concise sayings of the Buddha, Salayatana Vagga, that means talking about the six senses, and they are, the Buddha is giving very pragmatic, very dramatic, very sappy, very juicy examples and explain, so to say, somewhat to the engaged yogi, full-time yogi, or residential retreatants, how much you must take care about your five, six senses. So they are the Buddha start the discourse with an example. He says, imagine a person having some wounds, sore wounds, and some boils and runes and kind of thing. Now he is going through a very thorny forest, and while he is creeping through, going through the thorny forest, due to his wounds and the festering things, he gets so much of pain because the forest is very thorny, and wherever it prick, even without wounds, he will get irritated. Now he is already with wounds and the festering thing, and so while he is going, he can understand how difficult each and every moment. So in Sri Lanka we have a proverb which says that the wild buffalo, when it having some wounds in its back, he is hesitant to creep into a forest because he knows the soaring back. Pite vane tiyena meema kaleeta bayai, in Sinhala we call. So likewise, the person who is having that wounds and the soaring things, he, if it happen him or her to creep, knows the agony, knows the amount of pain. So likewise, the Buddha says, a person taken, who is taken this full-time retreat, or so to say, renounced, become a monk or a nun, and she or he is trying best to maximize the time to meditate, earn solitude and peace of mind. And after a while, he or she becomes somewhat discouraged and somewhat backward. So again, go back to the village. And then the villagers, normal day-to-day workers, see that particular person who has taken, gone forth and taken the forest life, living in solitude, and now coming back to the forest. And he used to criticize that particular person. You have already proclaimed, you have decided to go into the forest and to do dwelling in the solitude life. Now you come back, and when you come back, your whole physical, the moral restraint, concentration restraint, and the wisdom restraint, everything will be disturbed. Everything will be painful. And so he criticized that particular monk or nun or the yogi. Then that particular monk or nun or yogi becomes so upset about this criticism. So therefore he becomes very lowly and depressed and inferior kind of thing, so much of pain. And this example the Buddha is giving, but if he or she, or the monk or nun or the yogi, if he or she is well meditated and know each and every physical movement, physical posture, and developed mind, and if such a person, after living in the forest, and for a reason he goes to the forest, or to the village, or to the market, whatever may be, the people criticize, he or she, the person with that developed mind, never get irritated, never get distracted, never get inferior, because he or she is so well versed with his or her bodily posture, mindfulness on the body. So therefore, that particular person will get the criticism, they will never disturb, they will never carry it away, because he or she already experienced that kind of thing while living in the forest, while living in the solitude, while living in his or her place. And whatever the other people are going to say, they know how to maintain the composure, calmness, without getting inferiority. So you being in such a situation must restrain yourself. It is not the restraint regarding the morality. It is a further restraint or next step regarding the concentration. But you are the person gone forth, enter into the forest, sit under a tree, or live in a place like this, sunyagara, the free of sense desire, or people with the sensuous pleasure. And whenever you maintain your mindfulness, so to say, in your body, all the tactics and the techniques and the know-how you had in order to renunciate day-to-day life is not enough to maintain the peace of mind. to maintain the concentration, to maintain the calmness of the mind. So you, after renounced, you are now away from the people with sensuous pleasure, and you restrain, moral restraint, or morality, or precepts. And on top of that, whenever you take time to calm down or settle down your mind, you have to go for a deeper, very detailed techniques with the help of the calm down body and the mind, verbal work, then only on top of the morality or moral restraint, you can go for concentration restraint or calmness, and there you learn kind of techniques, and that techniques harden your mind. It is train your mind not to get carried away by the criticisms. You take only the constructive part of the criticism. You are not worried about the destructive kind of criticism. So you know people are critical. It is good. But you must have your filter. Only take the constructive criticism, and destructive criticism you do away. So even if you go to the forest, or even if you go to a vulnerable place, people of course express their views. You take whatever necessary for furtherance of your restraint, but you never get discouraged or develop inferiority, because that you have already done while you are practicing in the solitude place, in the forest dwelling, and that is called the concentration restraint. And on top of that, if you are developing further into the wisdom restraint, that means vipassana bhavana or insight meditation, still you are furthering how to deal with the bombarding objects or external stimuli, and how to take it as far as it is constructive, as far as it is positive, and don't deal with what is negative, what is critical, and then only you know how to look at your life in a positive way, or play the game, the glad game. You must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Let the critical people very awake. Let them critical throughout. Don't try to suppress it, but take whatever may be good, whatever may be constructive, for you to go further in restraint. There you, even in absence of the Buddha, in absence of the great disciples, you take the other's opinion as a teaching, but not the everything as a lump. You know how to filter and get the positive side. So that we are doing in this during the retreat time, and so therefore whatever the difficulties or odd thing happen or distractions happen, each and everything is a rehearsal. Like the day when you go out, same thing will happen. If you have experimented with them, or if you have succeeded that kind of thing, then you are hardening yourself, seasoning yourself, rather than try to do away with criticism, rather than do away with negative things, rather than do away with these pricky things. You never, it will cease to exist. You must understand how to maintain your integrity, how to maintain your balance, how to maintain your unshaky mind. So during the sitting meditation, or during the walking meditation, never, even to the Buddha, never everything happened 100% correct. Everything happened 100% positive. This world is a thorn. It's a thorny jungle. you are the bloody fool creeping through. So you can't expect the forest to be a red rose, a bed of red roses. You must understand how to proceed, and there is a method. That is what the Buddha is proclaiming, that there is a method. So you have to train in three kinds of restraint. Sila Sikha, your physical and verbal restraint. And once that is come up to a certain satisfaction, you start concentration, that is to keep the mind with one single object, neutral object, verifiable object, free of charge object. And when you are applying your mind again and again to the neutral, verifiable, this free of charge object, then you can understand our monkey mind. Even though physically and verbally we can claim we are satisfied with certain amount of restraint, you can see the monkey mind. So that indicates the places, the points where you must be attentive and do try to keep as much as possible with that neutral object, the verifiable object, the free of charge object. Then the monkey mind is jumping colorful things and dramatic thing instead of this verifiable, simple, direct, neutral object. So it appear like, if you are not looking at from looking from the correct perspective, it appear like the mind is very, very beneficial, mind is very, very friendly, mind is very, very considering about your well-being. So therefore, let the mind to run in a free way or free thinking, or instead keeping in one particular object. So this is what we have done so far. We gave all the facilities, all the amenities to the mind to send kites. And just sending throughout that, except keeping here and now. So the Buddha, one man army, he says, if you have a personality, if you have already achieved this physical, the moral restraint precepts, take this challenge. Try to keep the mind here and now. Then I will call you a person living. Otherwise you are living partially. You are bewildered. You are doped. You are always indulging past or future excitements, other people, other places. At the end of the day, utter disappointments. Next day morning, you start with full of appointments, list of appointments, list of do's and don'ts. Each day you go to the bed completely distorted, completely lost, disappointment. So instead, have an appointment with the disappointment. So have an appointment with the present moment. If anyone can say, no, I can't be in the present moment because of this and that, then he or she may be excluded. But who the hell can raise hands and say, I can't keep the mind in the present moment? Leave aside sitting in a comfortable posture and relax and keeping the mind in the present moment. Leave aside walking up and down for the sake of walking, pacing up and down and keeping the mind in the present moment. Leave aside the retreat work we do slowly, mindfully and silently, even back at home. Even with this multitasking, challengeful life, occasionally it is natural. It is natural, it's a default of the mind to occasionally come back and to understand my posture. Understand I am hungry. Understand I am thirsty. To understand I am sleepy. So you give a effect. It is passive, it is happening passively. It is called interoception. And in the meditation, you take it in a kind of an active way. How many thought moments am I with my posture? Am I with my body? Am I aware of the well-being of the body. So this is what the Buddha prescribed as kayagata sati, or awareness on the body, on body. So when it is happening, you can see, unless otherwise a benevolent person, a true man like Buddha, come and tell you, in our natural thinking, in our day-to-day thinking, mind will never go into that option. Always here and now is out of our timetable. Never. It's a solid fact. So someone has to come and tell you, not only by telling, not only by listening, you will put that software into your computer. You have to understand it is special message. You have to understand it is something extraordinary. So you have to give kind of a inferential knowledge, you have to give a kind of a deductive knowledge. Yes, I have never tried it. Why not to try? And that theoretical inferential knowledge or deductive knowledge itself is not enough. You may have to put into practice. And when you are putting into practice, I will assure you, it is painfully slow. So utter failure. Because I have a monkey mind. Unrestrained monkey mind jumping from one to the other. You try to keep it in one particular place. So imagine the same wild buffalo as we taken as example with the wound at his back, and he hesitant to go into the forest, thorny jungle. Likewise, imagine a well healthy, hefty buffalo wallowing in the very nice muddy area, and one person go on and catch hold and bring back to the village and drive a big good post and tie into the post with a very good rope and let it train, let it be in the village so that he can use it as a for agricultural work or kind of thing. So how much that the wild buffalo to go and understand to live in a village? So exactly the same, our wild buffalo, their untrained mind, taken to the forest or taken sit under a tree or in a solitude place, ask him to just to see a simple verifiable object, very neutral object, very free of charge object, exactly the same the wild buffalo taken to the civilized place like. So when it is happening, if you ask the buffalo, if you get the opinion of the buffalo, you can understand what will be the opinion the buffalo is going to give. You will never be a successful trainer. You will never can use that buffalo for harrowing or any kind of a work. So therefore, you yourself become a split now. One part is talking about the restraint or concentration restraint. The other part is this wild buffalo or the monkey mind. So you can understand within yourself, specifically for yogis, specifically for the renounced people, they are living in such a world to split. One part is utterly bewilderment, the other part is not only the moral restraint, going for the concentration restraint, living, keeping two legs in two worlds, and what kind of a equilibrium, what a kind of a balance. So very sympathetic. You must be very, very sympathetic when you are practicing. You have to understand this situation. So that is why the Buddha says, you must behave like a person with wounds, soaring wounds. You have to understand, you have to creep through, go through this thorny jungle, shrub jungle, and you are walking, each and every movement, each and every change of the posture or posture junctions going to give new irritation. So likewise in the meditation, you have to, you can understand each and every change of an object from one to the other, or different postures you are moving here and now, and can't you sit in the one particular posture, can't walk in the same place for longer time, and cannot difficult to keep the mind while you are brushing your teeth, cannot difficult to keep the mind while you are eating. So how much it is trying to do multitasking and escape. So that observation, what the kind of mental health you must have, what the kind of physical health you must have. If you are mentally imbalanced, if you are physically imbalanced, you see it's a losing game, losing war. So therefore, even if you achieve certain amount of moral restraint, when and where you put that, you forward, carried to this concentration restraint, it's an utter test. It's an utter acid test. See how much your physical health, how much your mental balance is useful and put into test when you do this concentration training. So you must be very, very sympathetic to yourself, and give as much as possible facilities, and let the mind to take this new area of challenge and proceed further. And you have to morally boost and take the challenge slowly, slowly. And for the beginner's point of view, it appear like utterly disadvantageous. The beginner becomes so much discouraged. So that's why this group action will give kind of a moral support. But once you develop certain amount of tactics, certain amount of ways and means, you see it has a cumulative effect. The gathering the momentum, after a while, it appears like adventurous. You understand the brain circuits never used are now put into use. It's called neurobics. New nerve systems and new ways and methods come into being, and you are very sharp. Rather, you are depending upon your own ways and means. Of course, there are some case histories, that is what we call the canon, maybe 15,000 discourses. Each and every person went through, they left some kind of memories. This is what the difficulty was. It is the ways and means that I assimilated, and at the beginning, of course, it is very sour. It is like a wounded person going through the creep, going through the thorny forest. But when you are going and come to know a certain amount of ways and means and skill, you understand that it gives so much of determination, so much of the mind power. And now you feel like take this as a challenge and go forward. So therefore, early effort or early methods and ways that you are using, you have to be so much forbearance. Sometimes it is being considered as a faith or your belief that it's time to come, I may learn it, but at the beginning it is very difficult. And the second thing is, whatever the difficulty happen, you must try to maintain your moral conduct, moral restraint. Don't forego it. And the third aspect, the faith, the seal or moral conduct or your precepts. And the third one is the mindfulness. If you have to verify, whatever the difficulty happen in sitting, whatever the difficulty you encounter in walking, whatever the difficulty you face with in day-to-day mindfulness, still you can believe this mindfulness is leading, or you can have faith to continue. And whatever the difficulty happen, it never directly address to your precepts. Precepts are not being challenged. Precepts are intact. So you have to each and every time have to think, maybe my body is painful and sounds are there, pains are there, mind is wandering and everywhere, but it never, it is a different paradigm, it never touch my morality. Morality is intact. So you can again and again be based upon the morality. And the last thing and the most important is, whatever this difficulty happen, the mindfulness is intact. It never breaks. The each and every pain, each and every unhappy, each and every irritating event, your mindfulness goes like a spike high. So you can understand, whenever the difficulty happens, you are utterly here and now. You are utterly with your body. You can't go away. You can ask the mindfulness, please go away, I am in trouble. Never. It never leaves you. So the day you understand it, whenever the difficulty happens, whenever the challenge happens, mindfulness takes so much of a booster dose, and the moment you understand, you will see being a human itself is an achievement. So an Irish girl, she wrote a book, Born to be Free. She says, after that much of a positive and win-win kind of experience, once you go through, you will understand, whether you like it or not, you are born enlightened. You don't know. The difficulty only and the correct methodology only will say, ways and means wise, we are equally potential. We have the equal possibilities, and when and where they understand the difficulty and put your correct, the method, the way, so when and where it is going to work, then you gain certain amount of confidence or determination or mind power, and see that all thing you are already endowed with. Only thing is, you are so traditional. You are so with blinkers. You never try besides your known rut. So in the concentration restraint, rather than in the moral restraint, is challengeful. Each and every challenge is a diversification, widening, and you have to consider that you can't copy. You can't copy anyone. If you copy, you fail the exam. You have to assimilate ways and means and share with other people working, and you can find that we are full of resources. We are full of possibilities. So therefore, born with that kind of equal possibilities and equal potential, so we have to catalytic effect. You have to start somewhere. And like a risk lover or happy to work with your own methodology, you have traditional tools, you have traditional methods. Of course, we will discuss as the series continue. But your assimilated, your ways and means give very original kind of a, maybe very tiny, small things, and stirring or catalyzing, and ultimately you feel like a risk lover, or you happy to face all the difficulties like a rehearsal, and when it's going there, you understand, even if you are a full-time yogi, even if you are a monk or nun, when the other people are criticizing you, why you are coming back to home, that you are supposed to be in the solitude place and you are supposed to be in sitting and walking, why you are coming, that you come to the village and kind of thing. He understands there is a message for restraint, but don't take it in a negative way. You know, because you have undergone certain amount of rehearsal in your monastic life or in your retreat life, and therefore we open new avenues, otherwise our minds are very, very partial. We are only using very limited amount of nervous cells, and we wish to keep only on the rut. Well, that is why we call human right bullshit. Human right is the capacity, total capacity. So whenever you put into practice and whenever the challenge happened, whenever you assimilated your method and go through, then you understand the potential is limitless. So that is the message Buddha is telling. I am a human. You are a human. You have ways and means. Unless otherwise this challenge and you put the correct methodology, you are just using second-hand knowledge from the others. The present education is killing our mind. The old ways giving a question and formula, we have to get the formula and answer the question, and then we get the full marks. And ultimately, you know, you claim you know, but when you put into practice, no way. Because practical situation is utterly not you find in the classroom. You must have that traditional knowledge. I am not looking down, but I am telling, unless otherwise you put into practice, the moral restraint, concentration restraint, and the wisdom restraint, our brain become very, very limited, not in full-fledged. So slowly, slowly, we have to understand ways and means, and the day, the moment it is working 100%, so then it's worth calling we are living. Otherwise, we are hiding ourselves, so escapism, they are going to only be in this our known rut, but here, each and every criticism, each and every challenge, each and every change of your object, each and every your change of your posture, becoming a challenge. Don't think that you will be faring in the whole 100%, but if you find some development, as I mentioned, in the very slow manner, the maintain of that trend, the keeping the trend for longer time, then it's gather the momentum. So that is what the main thing we expect in this kind of a full-time meditation or residential retreat. So therefore, let each and every individual to develop their own confidence. Don't disturb others. Don't get disturbed by others. Try to be mindful, whatever the posture you are. So we are going to discuss further the way techniques and tactics and techniques in time to come. Definitely, I hope, I know you have enough techniques and enough knowledge. Only the confidence you must understand. Don't consider it as a negative thing. Whatever happened negatively, consider as a rehearsal and try your best to keep the mindfulness in a short way. Whatever the posture you are, try to be mindful about your posture. That will be the starting point. With that remark, I would like to sum up today's talk. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu.